Hello and welcome to Total Film's Last Picture Show. I'm Matt Matem, Deputy Editor of Total Film, and the elevator pitch for this is it's the end of the world and you have one last night at the cinema. What four films are you programming? Today's guests are a filmmaking team who've been working together in various guises as far back as 2007, making short films and interactive adventures before establishing the current iteration of their collective in 2011. They've largely worked in the horror space, making Devil's Due, contributing to anthologies Southbound and VHS, and then breaking out with the enormously fun convention-busting Ready or Not, which starred Samara Weaving as a newlywed bride hunted by her husband's family. And now they're taking the reins on the fifth installment in the Scream franchise, which is in cinemas now.
Hello?
It's happening.
Three attacks so far. Do you have a gun?
I'm Sydney Prescott. Of course I have a gun.
Something about this one just feels different.
Welcome to Total Film's Last Picture Show, Radio Silence, who are producer Chad Villela.
Hi, this is Chad.
Director Tyler Gillett.
Hi.
And director Matt Bettinelli-Olpin.
Hey, what's up? You got the name right too, which is that's like a 1 in 10.
Well done. Yeah. Very well done.
Well done.
Well, thanks very much for joining us. And before we get stuck into your cinematic program for your last night on Earth, let's talk about your new film, Scream. It's the latest in the series that began in 1996 and reinvented the slasher film with humor and meta commentary alongside genuine scares. And Scream 2022 takes us back to Woodsboro and introduces lots of new blood alongside some familiar returning faces. So to kind of begin with, can you just start by setting up this new film for us and what audiences can expect from it?
Yeah, I think audiences expect more of what we certainly love about the franchise. From the earliest stages, I think that this project by design was meant to be a real love letter to Wes and Kevin and the universe of the Scream movies. And for as much as we hope to deliver on all of that, we also are really hoping to kind of push those stories in a new direction and modernize them in a way that makes it feel like that we can continue to tell stories about the characters in Woodsboro.
At the press screening I was at, there was an announcement delivered before the film in Roger L. Jackson's iconic Ghostface voice warning against spoilers. Has it been hard to kind of keep secrets on a film like this? Have you had to go to any extreme lengths to kind of preserve the secrecy and kind of protect that experience for audiences?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a thing we've been kind of battling, playing some game of whack-a-mole since we first read the script, you know? And like when we first read it, we had to go into the office to read it. There were no email copies or anything. And that's continued in some way, shape, or form throughout the process of making it. And especially now, and people start seeing it tonight, it's going to get really,
really real
under control. But, you know, I mean, one of the things that we always talked about is what part of what makes the originals and especially the original Scream so special is that we all went into it kind of blind and didn't know what to expect. And that was part of the fun of that experience. And, you know, we just hope people can have as much of a pure experience as possible and get to enjoy it.
While we never condone spoilers, it's something that has driven us mad since we started on this. There's also something exciting that there's a fan base that's so hungry for, you know, for something, for more that they are, you know, willing to kind of go to the lengths to see it. And so there's also something exciting. There's an energy behind that is, while frustrating, also evident that there is a fan base that is hungry for more Scream.
Right. And while we don't condone like spoiling the movie for anybody, but sometime in the next couple of weeks, we think it would be fantastic if everybody had a discussion about the movie. And like obviously that's why we make them, right? We want to have people debate what their parts they liked, what parts they didn't like, what worked for them, what didn't work for them. I think that's all part of releasing a movie into the world. You want to spark conversation and see how it affects everybody on a personal level.
And to use a term referred to in the new film, what are the biggest challenges when it comes to making a requel?
Well, that's actually a really good question. And I think the way we approached it, and this goes for the entire filmmaking team of us, Project X, Kevin Williamson, everybody involved, was like, we had a very sincere respect and love for the originals. And not just the original Scream from 96, it's all four of them. We love every single movie in it. And I think when you're continuing a storyline within an existing franchise, you know, you need to tip your hat to all of it and pay attention to everything that came before. I think that's what makes something that has a legacy like Scream interesting, right? It's like everybody watches all the different Scream movies for different reasons, and they all attach to different characters. And you know, one of the most fun things that we look at right now is everybody's ranking of the movies and the way they rank them. And those are always a little bit different, right? And acknowledging that there is a past that we are building on, and hopefully making this Scream accessible to those who may not even be familiar to the past films, is something that we all took very seriously going into making this movie.
Yeah, that was something I thought was very smartly done about this film, actually. Could you just explain a bit about Radio Silence, how your dynamic works and how you sort of work as a filmmaking team?
Lots of therapy.
It's a thing that we've sort of developed and has evolved over a decade of working together. And, you know, we came from a real DIY way of making stuff where we weren't interested in titles, or we all had a love of every part of the process and just wanted to, you know, hang out with our friends and make cool things. And I think there's a lot of the origin of that still present in this, right? We're dear friends. We love each other. We've been working together for a long time. And I think, you know, really for us, we sort of talk about it like a band, right? That everyone kind of plays their instrument with fluency, but it just doesn't sound right when we're not all playing them together. And, you know, there's just a real Venn diagram of taste and of love of movies, and we challenge each other and we fight with each other and we agree with each other. But I think at the end of the day, it's just so much more fun to share success and to share failure with your friends. And there's this sort of built-in family from the start with us because of our origin.
And kind of just before we get into your kind of last picture show program, I just wanted to ask, what is the first film you all remember seeing at the cinema, kind of, you know, at the earliest age?
I know mine. Mine's easy. My parents took me to Empire Strikes Back when I was like 3 or 2, like I was very young. And I have one very clear image of it, and that is it. I don't really remember anything else. My parents told me that right before they took me to it, or right after, I don't know, they took me to a Halloween party where somebody was dressed up as Darth Vader, and I just started crying.
It's amazing. The first one I really remember is The Muppets Take Manhattan, which isn't a horror movie, but went from being like a little kid. I think I was in kindergarten at the time when that came out. I'm like, this is super fun going to a movie and experiencing cinema like this. Not that many people call Muppets Take Manhattan true cinema, but to me, it was as a little.
Oh, watch it. Absolutely. Yeah. Great. Yeah.
Going to be some comments in the comment section for that
right
one.
Now, here we go.
My first movie and the most interesting theatrical experience for me are very different. So I'll tell you the one that changed me, and it was Jurassic Park. I was at an age where I was already falling in love with movies, and I was also still young enough to just, I understood that they were something that was made, but there was still just the level of magic and fantasy in them was so huge. And that was one that I saw 10 times in the theater, and was, I think, a galvanizing moment for me, where I was like, oh, well, this is have to be a part of this, whatever this process is that makes this thing a reality. I have to be involved in that in some way.
Yeah, that was similar for me with Jurassic Park. That was definitely a formative one. So to get into the last picture show element, it's the end of the world and you're programming your last night at the cinema, and you're going to pick one film each, and then there's going to be a group choice at the end to make up the four films. So let's start with you, Tyler. What film are you selecting?
I am choosing Aliens.
Seven. Six.
Can't be, that's inside the room.
It's reading right, man, look.
Well, you're not reading it right.
5 meters, man. Four. What the hell? Oh, my God.
Oh, give me the light.
Not only one of just the greatest sequels ever made, but one of the greatest sci-fi horror movies ever made. One that I saw really young, and similar to Jurassic Park in a lot of ways, just opened my brain in ways that I didn't know it could be inspired.
Yeah, it's an absolute classic. And yeah, so is it for you? Is it one of those sequels that bests the original?
I don't know if best, I mean, neck and neck, but I think the thing, and it's one that it's a touchstone for us that we talk about all the time, it's a movie that is of that era where movies could just do a bit of everything and do it all so successfully. And you know, it's a mix of certainly like horrific set pieces. There's insane action. It's funny as hell. It's super cool and stylish. It's like everything about it is iconic. And it's one of those rewatchable movies that's just always on repeat in my house. The sort of, I think, litmus test for us to a certain extent is when you watch something and you go, like, I wish I had a fraction of the talent that went into making that movie. It's just one of those that I think is perfect in every way, and it never, ever gets old.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome choice. And kind of just before we kind of go on to the next film, a quick question for everyone. Do you have a kind of favorite cinema where you would like to be kind of programming this last night at the movies?
I think the answer for us is probably all different, right?
Yeah, it's all different. Go for it.
It reminds the Orpheum in Flagstaff, Arizona, downtown Flagstaff, Arizona, where I saw Jurassic Park that 10 times and was the place, big single screen, old theater, terrible sound, but was just always an experience being in that theater space.
Yeah, mine is the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland, California. I mean, it's the theater I fell in love with movies at. It's where I saw everything when I was a kid. You know, they've got an organ coming out playing before the movie, and it makes me feel warm. I love it. I saw all my favorite movies there when I was a kid, and Scream is playing there this weekend, which is kind of a dream come true.
Well, and a photo of it makes a cameo appearance.
That's right. That's correct.
That's very true. Yeah, and then mine is the Cinema 3 in Dubois, Pennsylvania, which is about 20 miles from my hometown, but it was the closest theater to where I grew up. Honestly, like even like looking over all our lists, I know we haven't gone through them yet. I think it's kind of funny that we'd program them in the places where we first were introduced to movies. Mm-hmm. And if you notice, there's not a movie on our list that wasn't released after 1996.
Like 1990. So
they're all movies from our childhood, right? And I think that's what the power of movies is. They catch you at a certain age and they open the world to you in a different way. And they just become implanted into your brain and part of your DNA in a way that will affect you like creatively and you know, for some of us professionally for years to come. And I think that's like why movies are so absolutely powerful and beautiful to all of us.
And the way they grow with you. And one of the things we always talk about is how, you know, you can watch movies that you loved when you were young. I mean, the one that I always think of is Stand By Me, where you watch it when you're young and it's about the kids.
Yeah.
And you watch it as an adult and you go, oh, this is Richard Dreyfuss's story. I didn't even realize that when I was younger. But to be able to grow with movies, I think that's like the high watermark for like great creative output, great art.
On to the second film on the program. And Matt, this is your choice now. What are you picking?
I'm picking Pump Up the Volume from 1990.
First of all, you're not screwed up. You're an unscrewed up reaction to a screwed up situation. You see, feeling screwed up in a screwed up place in a screwed up time does not mean that you're screwed up.
It's just one of my favorites, and it's what we're talking about. You know, it's one of those movies that just hit me at the exact right time, at the exact right age. I have such great memories of seeing it when I was younger. I'm younger than those people, so they were kind of like, I was probably 12 or 13 when I saw it. It was about 17, 18 year old, so it's kind of, there was like a mystical thing happening. It's just got like, I think, a great love story, a great like kind of finding your voice story. There's like the rebellion aspect to it. There's the loner who finds the other loner. It's just everything I love about great characters. You know, it's a comfort movie for me. I put it on all the time. And every time I watch it, I'm still kind of blown away by some of the conversations they're having within it, because it's actually very ahead of its time. I think a lot of the movies we're talking about, if you look at what's happening in Pump Up the Volume, it's not much different than what's going on social media now. It's just kind of the way that we express it has changed, but it's still that same kind of idea of finding yourself, finding your voice, falling in love, all the fun life stuff.
There was just no one cooler than Christian Slater in that era either, was there?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, between like that, Young Guns 2, it's like he was the guy that is Billy Jean.
He's so aspirational.
Awesome choice. Straight on to the next one now, and kind of making the next choice for the program is Chad. Chad, what are you going for?
I'm going with Goodfellas. In my opinion, still Martin Scorsese's best.
As far as Jimmy was concerned, with Tommy being made, it was like we were all being made. We would now have one of our own as a member.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's this? This is Vinny.
Vinny, what happened? Well, we got straightened out?
No, we had a problem. I mean, we tried to do everything we could.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what I mean. He's gone. And we couldn't do nothing about it.
It honestly just brings you back to a place in time where you're, for me, it was like when I was being introduced into movies that weren't, you know, at friends' parties on VHS. It was going to the movies and actually experiencing like these larger than life characters who just resonate for generations, you know, with you. And honestly, it's like the introduction to the antihero for me in a way. These guys aren't good people and we're following their lives and the horrible, horrendous things they do. It shines a light on the way not to do things and the way not to live in a great way. And the brilliance of it all is like glamorizing it at the beginning and coming, focusing it through Henry Hill's eyes. And, you know, even starting the movie with like, for all my life, I always wanted to be a gangster. And then seeing what his life becomes and just the filmmaking techniques that everything he used, the quick cuts, the soundtracks, like everything in that movie just resonates, you know, for me personally on a whole different level. And being, you know, from an Italian family outside of Pittsburgh, I was like, wow, they're talking about our cousins. And like, that's not a good thing. But yeah, so there's all that. And again, just obviously the drama of the entire piece is just fantastic. All the bedroom scenes between Henry and Karen are more or less like the best of the best, like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf stage play, like dramas, and they all go to another level. And then you have, you know, the gangster scenes with like Tommy and Jimmy. And at one moment you're laughing and the next moment you're terrified for what they're about to do because they're so unreliable and just so sociopathic and just crazy. Like looking back, that might've been the slippery slope into balancing tones and everything that, you know, obviously Wes Craven kind of perfected with the original Scream segue. And it was just
way to segue.
You know, I think it was just fun. Cause one minute you're laughing at Tommy and the next minute you're terrified about what he might do. And it just slowly devolves and disintegrates into just, you know, mush at the end as to what their lives have become after what they started to be. To me, it's just a wonderful movie.
Yeah, they grew up on gangster movies, but do movies create psychopaths or?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so just one more quick interlude before we get to the final film choice. And who would be on your guest list for this last picture show? If you could just choose anyone kind of living or dead, who's coming to this?
Just my entire family. Mm-hmm. I think I would want to.
Well, I mean, like, how literal are you being about the end of the world?
Yeah, I took it deep. Again, like I said, it's a lot of therapy. I was like, what's the very last movie? You know, who you're seeing it with, where you're seeing it. It's like, it all goes back to home and family to me.
Yeah, I mean, Guy and Jamie would be on the list. There aren't two humans that I enjoy talking about movies more than with those two guys. It is a daily thing, hundreds of texts a day on our text chain about movies we love, the things we love about them, the things we don't. And there is just so much enthusiasm for movies with those two guys. I think they'd be fantastic guests.
That's a great one.
Definitely not Guy and Jamie.
Definitely.
Just kidding. They're invited. In my fantasy here, after this movie, I get to go spend time with my family and loved ones. Mm. After this movie. So during the movie, I mean, you know, maybe Christian Slater.
Nice.
See what he's like, one. You know, like.
Nice.
Allowed. Awesome. Allow it.
And now that brings us round to the final film of the program, which is the group choice. And I mean, there's probably only one film this could have been. But guys, what are you choosing?
VHS. Scream. We're choosing Scream.
Yeah. 1996, not Scream 2022.
Scream 1996.
Choosing not your own Scream movie would be a incredible flex.
Can you see me right now? Okay. What am I doing? What am I doing? Hello? Nice try, Randy. Tell Tatum to hurry up, okay? Bye now.
If you hang up on me, you'll die just like your mother. Do you want to die, Sydney? Your mother sure didn't.
No, it's changed our lives now. And that's not hyperbole more than once in a lot of ways. You know, we all fell in love with it when we first saw it. And then now we're here having made the fifth version of it, or the fifth sequel, or the, I guess the fourth sequel, but the fifth movie. Yeah. And I mean, guys, jump in, but it's just, it's a perfect movie for us. And I just think, you know, us sitting around watching that End of Days sounds wonderful.
Wonderful. I welcome the End of Days, if that is the experience we all get to have. No, I think for us too, what we'd say is that for us, it opened up the genre in ways that, that just hadn't been done before. Right. And if you're thinking about where we're at outside of getting to be a part of this insane franchise, which is just absolutely incredible to us, but what it did for horror filmmaking, you can't uncreate the effect that it had on the craft and on audiences. And I think it paved the way in countless ways for this incredible kind of horror renaissance that we're all living in right now. Think that movie was an entry point for so many people into the franchise. It showed them that it could be smart and funny and heartfelt and scary and all of those things. And I think really, really put like the craft of horror filmmaking on the map, even though obviously amazing horror films had been made before it. I think that it was really kind of a calling card. It was the megaphone that made audiences go, we have to pay attention to the genre. Like there is a lot happening and we will miss it if we don't open our eyes.
Yeah. And to me, it's just, it's a personal section. Again, I went super reflexive on all of this again, since it was The Last Night on Earth. I'm like, oh wow, we got to go deep with this. And Scream would be,
that went very little,
but it would be like the one movie that like kind of changed lives. Right. And changed my life, because it's like what made me want to get into making movies and doing what we do for a living. And, you know, I think in a nice reflexive time in the twilight of the earth, I think that would be a nice watch to have.
Yeah, it's a good time.
We made the right choice.
We'll enjoy ourselves for 2 hours.
And how often were you guys revisiting it during the process of making your movie?
Nonstop. You know, like we'd get home from a day of shooting and turn it on for half an hour, maybe watch 20 minutes here, watch an interview that Wes Craven did that we found on YouTube. Like it has now been a major part of our lives, like deeply embedded in the fabric of our lives for the last 2 years. I mean, I watched the original 2 nights ago, me and my wife watched it.
We had it playing on set, you know, setting up shots like, oh, this is maybe an interesting moment to kind of do something like this in the original Scream. So it was even present on set certain days.
It just feels so fresh as well, still after like 25 years. It just feels
Really does.
Amazing. Yes.
Yeah. I've got a very few quick fire questions about the cinema to finish on for you guys. So when it comes to popcorn,
is the world ending for these questions or no?
Well, for one of them, it is. For popcorn, for popcorn, salty or sweet?
Salty,
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 salty all the way. Okay. And trailers or no trailers playing before these films? Do you like trailers as part of the experience, or do you prefer to get straight into the film?
Yes, like trailers for me. But the 40 minutes now that we're getting, that feels like a lot.
Like 15 minutes of trailers, perfect. Give me some time to settle into the theatrical experience, tease me with some cool, awesome stuff, and then it's go time. That's what I love.
Yeah, strong agree on that one. I think less is more. Just enough to give you a taste of what else is to come, but get you into the movie quicker.
I do not need to take a bathroom break before the movie's even started.
Yeah, exactly. Like when they start the trailers, you go for the fourth trailer.
And the final question, as the screen burns on this last night on Earth, what movie soundtrack are you playing?
You know what soundtrack I'm playing? Chad, I'm doing Goodfellas. That was my favorite soundtrack when I was young. I loved it. I listened to it all the time. And it's so romantic and just like, I love it.
Rolling Stones are playing. It's kind of like the way to go, right? It's like, that's a good way to go out. It's like pretty.
That is a great soundtrack. Yeah. That is a great soundtrack.
But besides that, I would probably go Moulin Rouge. Just because I love the music in that, and I love everything.
That's another great answer. Are we talking like needle drops and score, or just score, or just needle drops?
Whatever you want.
For me, one of the greatest bits of composition of music is the Fargo soundtrack. That is one that I just could listen to by Carter Burwell. Just to take it to like not needle dropville. That is one that for me stands out as one of the greatest pieces of music ever written.
And if we're talking not needle drop, we're doing score and the world is burning. I mean, the T2 score would be incredible.
Yeah, you are setting the apocalypse to that score.
Well, we got up to like almost 1990 or 99.
I think 92. We swear we do watch movies that were made after 1992, but
yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time today, guys. I really appreciate it. It's been enormous fun. And again, just huge congratulations on the film and kind of best of luck with everything kind of that comes next.
Thank you.
I just had such a blast with it. I'm sure Scream fans just will, you know, just going to love it. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah. That was a great conversation. Yeah. Thank you.
Really fun. Yeah, this was so much fun.
So Radio Science's last picture show will be Aliens, Pump Up the Volume, Goodfellas and Scream. Let us know if you'd like to see that program via Twitter and Instagram, where we're at Total Film. And you can hear Noomi Rapace, Amal Amin and our very own Jamie Graham's last picture show podcasts, which are available now. And next week, Wynne Evans will be joining us to discuss his four favorite movies.
That was the Last Picture Show podcast from Total Film. Let us know what four films you'd watch at the end of the world. You can tweet us on @TotalFilm or connect with us on Facebook or our Instagram page.